This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, everybody. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. And today, I think I'm not sure what direction we're going today. Might be just turned into a full-fledged BS session, maybe a buck story, maybe two dudes talking about hunting. And really, that's what it is every time. But Mr. Zach Rentmeester, how we doing, dude?
Good. Yourself?
I'm doing good, dude. Are you getting hammered with rain like we are?
Yesterday and tonight, it's supposed to be coming.
Yeah. Dude, it's been raining nonstop. Like, cricks are out of the, their banks. We got baseball fields just flooded. Everything, you know, everything got canceled tonight. We got a tournament this weekend that's not looking too good. Even a little bit of rain is probably going to get the games canceled because they're already saturated with water. So we're going to need like some really sunny and windy days basically tomorrow in order for that. But I think we're supposed to get more rain tomorrow. So I'm not sure what's going to happen. It's just a lot of wetness.
Next 10 days.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, this is probably going to end in a BS session. And so, I just am going to kind of shoot from the hip on this episode. This is one of those episodes where I reached out to the masses and I said, "Hey, who wants the podcast?" And you were like, "Dude, I'll do it. Let's do it." And we're gonna BS a little bit today. But before we get into that, why don't you talk to me a little bit about where you live and what do you do for a living?
I'm in Southeast Sheboygan, or Wisconsin,
yep,
between Milwaukee and Green Bay, about an hour each way.
Okay.
Sanitation at a Johnsonville sausage facility for 14 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Assistant team lead, so run around the building doing whatever.
Yeah. I've done your job, my friend.
Yep. I heard that with the WCP podcast.
Yeah, dude. Like, third shift, right? You're a third shift worker, man. Correct. And then the thing about it is, it's like first shift starts on time no matter what. Right. Yep. And if second shift goes over, it's not like the sanitation team gets extra time necessarily to. They want first shift to start when first shift starts, and that every minute over that time frame, then, you know, it's just like money that the company's not making, and they got it boiled down to a minute, and then sanitation always seems to get the pressure.
Oh yeah, it's always sanitation's fault.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So did you always work at that same plant in the sanitation department for that long?
Same plant up until about 2 years ago. I was doing something else in the building.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, man. So for the listeners out there, in food manufacturing facilities, you got to take one shift off to sanitize the, you know, basically ceiling to floor, and, you know, and clean everything. And so that way, when they make your food, then it's on a clean surface, right? My God, man. Like, I don't know about you. Probably you have a little bit better structure behind your position and who works for you and things like that. But I worked for a company. They were fairly unorganized. My plant was unorganized. There's just all these different power dynamics there. And dude, it just sucked ass. I worked every day. I worked every day of a month. It was nuts.
Yep. 12 on, 2 off.
Old. Yeah, dude, it sucks. Is the money worth it though?
Some days and other days. It pays for the house. It pays for the non-resident tags. So.
There you go. That's a win, dude. That's a win. Cool, man. Well, I share your frustration when there's frustration, and I understand you, my friend. So we're on equal terms, right? Right now.
Got good days and bad days.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And at the end of the day, any job that pays for the tags is a good job, right?
Yep. Plenty of overtime and plenty of vacation days, so it works.
There you go. There you go. Cool, man. All right. Before we get into today's episode, I am going to send a huge shout out to the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles. And I'm going to buzz through these real quick. If you are looking for a badass broadhead, most of their heads are still made in the United States of America. Go check out wasparchery.com. Mechanicals and fixed blades that absolutely destroy whatever you shoot at. I do have a discount code, NFC20 for 20% off. Go check out wasparchery.com. Vortex Optics, here pretty soon. I mean, the beans and the corn, they're coming up and they're coming up fast. And it's very, very close to gravel travel season is what I call it. And it's when you hop in the truck with your kids and some binoculars and you're going and looking for velvet bucks. We've already seen a couple cruising the back roads here with my boys. And so the bean field season is coming up quick. So go check out Vortex's complete lineup of apparel. They got a badass apparel line. They have binoculars, rangefinders, rifle scopes, red dots, you name it. They have it. VortexOptics.com. Next on the list is Reveal Trail Cameras. A very, very easy to use trail camera. You scan a QR code, you download the app, and you have a fully functioning cellular trail camera. Very simple, badass app that pairs with them. And these guys are doing some great things. Very awesome product. Go check them out. Tacticam.com/cameras. And then last but not least, we have Code Blue Scents, real and synthetic deer urines, scent elimination products like laundry detergents, body sprays, those types of things. Go check out CodeBlueScents.com and look for my favorite product. Let's see, how would I do this if I was a car or like a radio personality? If I was a radio personality, I'd go check out the Code Blue Scents Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit, and just like some cheese ball voice. But anyway, it's my favorite product, the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit. Go check it out. That's how I do my commercials. That's how I get paid. Thank you very much for your patience, everybody. Zach, let's talk bucks. You live in Wisconsin, on the eastern side of the state. A lot of the people I talk with are from the southern or western part of Wisconsin. What's deer hunting like in your area?
There's good quality bucks if they can reach that age, but yep. Pressure every private acre got someone in it, or you might get it where we like to feed the deer and watch them kind of thing. So there's those pockets where they could hide and stay safe, but other than that, there's a lot of guys.
Yeah. So is that mainly because you're sitting smack dab in the middle of Green Bay and Milwaukee and people are at some point have to expand out to try to find places to hunt?
That and just in Sheboygan, that's a pretty big city. And yeah. Everyone kind of was raised the same way. It seems that you're hunting, fishing, or we got Road America, so there's racing.
Yeah.
But everyone and their cousin seems to hunt now, and you're losing private permission every year.
Yeah. Is that because of like outfitters, or is that because of leasing?
None. It's just my family hunts or my kid hunts. There's no outfitters by us. You might get some leasing, but that's pretty few and far between.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then, every acre is spoken for. Like, are you on family farms? Do you own your own property? What's your scenario?
We have some permission pieces that my dad had 25, 30 years ago that we still can hunt, but now they're getting sold off, or, hey, my cousin wants to hunt, so they get to hunt, and then they bring a buddy and you kind of get kicked out, which I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have a lot of places to go, or have you lost property in recent years?
Oh, probably in the last 5 years, we've lost quite a few properties, some amazing properties, but we still got those little 20 to 40 acre pieces, like three or four of them. And then there's public all around us.
Oh, okay. So that's the saving grace a little bit, is the public.
Yeah. Yeah. The one piece is 20 acres of wood, but probably 130 acres worth of crops. And then right across the road, there's thousands of acres of public.
Okay. All right. And so does that get hammered then throughout the year? Does the public get smashed?
Bull season is pretty busy. I mean, you know, that October, November, but gun season, the one opening day between the three parking lots, I counted 54 cars.
My Lord. At that point,
a guy like me, I drive by that and I go, I don't even know if I would feel safe going in there.
A lot of it is so thick that it's kind of scary. You don't know where people are.
Mm-hmm.
You all have to access the same way, but you could come in from boat in a lot of the places. So yeah, there's just people, but most of your shots might be 30 to 50 yards, how thick it is. It's just cedar swamp, amracks.
Which makes it good, right? I mean, that's the reason people are there, is because it's so thick. And when you have an environment like that, I'm guessing that some bucks slip through every single year and people are pulling some decent ones out of there.
If you can get them, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Are you allowed to run trail cameras on public in Wisconsin?
For now, yeah. We still have them where we can. So I got a few out there always.
Are you catching good deer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same deer that I might get on private, they'll be across the road half mile.
Gotcha. Okay. What about, what's the quality of deer like in your area? Like when you set out at the beginning of the season, what is your goal every single year?
I mean, that 125 to 145, 150 might be the biggest you have all year, but one guy shot a 220 one year, a neighbor shot a 175. So they're there. It's just very few in between.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you feel like it's getting harder every year to run into? So I went through a stage in Iowa where, dude, it was stupid, the amount of deer. And what I mean deer, I mean, I think I had the one year I was chasing like seven deer over 170 at that point it was three different farms that I had access to. And like I was seeing giant deer. I was seeing like the amount of deer that were like 140 and up, I probably had 25 of them. It was like, there was multiple years where it was like that, ridiculous. And then every year it seemed to just drop down to where I haven't had a Boone and Crockett caliber deer on any, well, I take that back. 2 years ago I did, I had one. And then the other, like I've had one deer in probably 6 years that were Boone and Crockett, Boone and Crockett caliber whitetails. Outside of that, dude, the quality seems to be going down even in the state of Iowa. So, or at least on the farms that I have permission to be on. What are you seeing as far as quality?
Probably the same. I mean, 10, 15 ago, you'd have multiple shooter bucks.
Yeah.
And now it seems like you find one to three that you'd be happy to chase all fall between private and public.
Yeah. Yeah.
You always get that fire buck that no idea where he's from, there for a week maybe and never to be seen or heard again.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're getting into the north central part of, where do you hunt north central Wisconsin then, or like in that eastern side of the state?
Right along Lake Michigan, up 30 minutes along the side of the state there.
Does that body of water ever influence the weather patterns at all on your side?
Oh, I think it does. You get some weird storms, or just winds are constantly switching between Michigan and Lake Ego is right in between. There'll be days winds coming from the east, and then a minute later it's for the west, 5 minutes. So it's like you're kind of just shooting yourself in the foot, hoping it stays one way.
Yeah. Yeah. And so are you more of a archery hunter? Are you a gun hunter? Do you do both?
I do both, but if I had to shoot one, I'd rather shoot with the bow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Been hunting since I was 12, just turned 35 a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I've been doing it for.
Yeah. I heard some guy on the internet, right? The internet, talk about Wisconsin. And I don't know, and I want to ask you, because everybody seems to think like Wisconsin was number one in the state for giant bucks at some point in history, right? Like it's at some point, Wisconsin was the big buck capital of North America for whitetails. And something happened over the course of time where they've continued to trend down. Maybe that's a little bit of the CWD issue in certain parts of the state. Maybe it's rules and regulations in certain parts of the state. Are you, my question to you is, are you happy with the rules and regulations for Wisconsin, or and have you seen a trend downward in quality, not just bucks, but hunting in general?
Oh, I'd say hunt in general for sure has gone down. Probably 15, 20 years ago, you could use rifles. It was always just shotgun or firearm season. Crossbows were kind of like you have a doctor's note or some kind of injury to use them. Now, any 20-year-old can go out, buy one, and use them. Just the population itself has gone down. You used to see 10 to 15 deer a night. Now I'm happy to see two or three if I'm in the right spot.
Yeah. Yeah. And why do you think that is? Why do you think it's, in your opinion, trending in the wrong direction?
They say hunter numbers are down, but I think they're way higher than at least around where I am.
Yeah.
Now I think that head go out, buy a crossbow from off the shelf to get more guys out. We're just gun hunters. I mean, everyone that I knew growing up, as soon as you were 12, you were in the woods. So I don't know if there's a bigger age group now hunting before, like my grandpa and my dad were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the western side of the state, that's all bluff country and outfitters. So I think the numbers are still there for giant deer. It just, I don't think people shoot them as much because a lot of ground is leased up.
Yeah. Do you think there is a non-resident, like, has there been any, let me ask you this question. Has there been a buzz, like Missouri is thinking about going to a draw system? Other states are thinking about, you know, dropping the over-the-counter tag, getting in a lottery system. So non-residents have to buy preference points or get into a lottery or apply for their tags. Do you see or hear any buzz about Wisconsin doing that? All right, guys, you know me, and I love eating wild game, but I don't eat wild game every single night. Every once in a while, I'll reach for a side of beef, and that's why I trust Omaha Steaks. Because Omaha Steaks are sent directly to my door, I can keep my freezer stocked without having to go to the grocery store. It's honestly like having a trusted butcher and gourmet food shop right at your house. Last week, I pulled out their pure ground ribeye burgers for a quick grill session. The flavor and marbling was unreal, rich, juicy, and miles ahead of any average grocery store meat. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. This summer, America turns 250 years old, and there's no better way to celebrate than getting outside and exploring this great nation. One way to do that is to rent a camper or RV from Outdoorsy. Outdoorsy is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S., making it easy for anyone over 21 to rent an RV or camper without owning one. With Outdoorsy, you can drive it yourself, tow it, or even have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. With comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, and roadside assistance, Outdoorsy gives you the peace of mind you need when on the road. Outdoorsy is even the perfect option for your next out-of-state hunting or fishing trip. Right now, my listeners can have all service fees removed from their bookings in 2026 with code EMPIRE at Outdoorsy.com. That's Outdoorsy.com and use code EMPIRE at checkout to remove service fees. It's time to get outside and enjoy your summer.
Not that I've seen or heard. We're probably the cheapest state in the West to come to deer if you want to come shoot anything.
Yeah.
First buyer is $80.
Yeah. For a non-resident tag is $80 to get a tag.
And then it's like $160 every time after that.
Yeah. So is that, but I can, if I wanted to come here to bow hunt, I can grab a non-resident tag over the counter and go kill a deer. And then, but how many bucks can you kill in a year in Wisconsin?
you could shoot one with the bow, and then our gun season in the Saturday before Thanksgiving, get another buck tag.
Okay, so you're a 2 buck state.
Yep, and yeah, you could shoot probably as many does as the deer will give you.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the same with Iowa. I mean, and it's all broken down by county here, so they do their road drives and they do their reporting and things like that that allow the quotas to be filled for those counties. Do they have anything like that in place in Wisconsin?
Yeah, we have our different districts, but every time you shoot, what county, what you're in.
Yeah.
So they keep pretty well, but what to do with that information. I don't think we need as many doe takes to get here where we are, but every year.
Are you happy with Wisconsin and how they make their rules and regulations every year, or is there something that you would like to see changed?
I'd like to see changed. I mean, we have gun seasons probably from end of November up until January where you could shoot a holiday hunt or doe only, and it's just go fill your tags and have at it.
Mm-hmm. And you'd like to see some of that be removed?
Yeah, I mean, from September until the end of January in our county, you can hunt between bow, gun season, and then it kind of closes up for archery, and then it's open again until the end January, like the 30th, it goes till.
Oh, so even Wisconsin goes that long for like... Okay. And is that a doe-only deal in those counties?
Yeah, it's like we have a holiday hunt where you can shoot doe from like the week before Christmas till after New Year. You gotcha. Can only shoot no bucks.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's cool. All right. So when you were messaging me, you were talking a little, and we had this conversation before we started recording. You killed a buck recently. You sent it in to be aged, and it came back at 14 and a half years old. Is that accurate?
According to the people that did the teeth, yeah, that's what it came back. I figured it was around 8 and a half from the years I picked up sheds and stuff like that. But yeah, it came back at 14 and a half, which... hard to believe for around here. Even 8 and a half seems crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'll say this. The oldest buck that I've ever heard in Iowa being killed was one that I actually hunted. Some of the people who listen to this podcast may be familiar with the story of Shipwreck. And that's this old giant deer who was like, he was a Boone and Crockett at 3 years old. And he remained a Boone and Crockett. And he hit 200 inches 2 years in a row. And that would have been like, 3-year-old. I don't know him as a 2-year-old. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He was 200 inches for the first time. 8, he was a 185, maybe 190. And then he was killed the next, or his 9th year was his biggest antlered year at 210 inches. And that's when I hit him and didn't kill him. The neighbor killed him the next year at an even 200 inches. And he came back from a tooth report at 10 years old. Right. He was a 10-year-old buck. That was the highest. That means that this buck was 4 years older than that. Talk to me about this buck. How long did you know him? Or was it just a fluke buck that showed up and you shot him?
I mean, he definitely didn't grow 200 inches. I mean, he was probably the same every year. He had like 24-inch beams, mainframe 8-pointer. I picked his first shed up in 2017. Never saw him on camera or anything like that again. 2018, the same field, found the other, or the same side, but the next year, 2019, ran cameras all over, never saw them, never found sheds. And then on 2020, I went back on that public that's across the road, found a shed, definitely the same year, just the characteristics in the beam, the way the broad tine swoops back. And finally, that year, I ran a bunch of cameras way back on that public. Instantly started picking them up around August, September.
Mm-hmm.
Tried hunting them, never saw them in person. Had them on camera up until about gun season, then nothing.
Yeah.
2021 comes around, couldn't find shed. And then on that private, it's about a half mile as the crow flies. About end of July, there he is.
Yeah.
Every night, come from bean field, he'd go back into corn, I think, to bed, because that's all that was behind it was corn and CRP. And there's a couple fence lines from the crop fields. And then the opening night, I had to go to my cousin's wedding, and he daylighted with like 10 minutes left. I'm like, yeah, of course.
There's damn weddings, dude. Stupid.
I got married in the fall too. Like, but I tried to make it early or the rut. So,
yep.
Well, yeah. So that opening night, he shows up. I'm like, just had a baby that in June. So kind of sleeping whenever he slept. We had a storm come through on the 21st of September. I took him to my parents, set up, and by 6:30, this deer feeding through the corn. Now, the rolls were kind of knocked down, either him or the raccoons. And I shot him at like 15 yards in the cornfield. And he ran off and piled up. And yeah, same deer, matched everything.
Okay, I got a lot of questions, right?
Yeah.
This particular buck, did he have, so he had some defining characteristics on his antlers that allowed you to just follow him throughout the years. So when you found the sheds, it was like, dude, this is him. See him on trail camera. This is him. Like, so you knew for a fact it was the same deer.
Yeah. Just the way the beam sweeps and there's like a dip in it and the one brow curls back like a hook almost.
Yep.
You kind of could tell there's no other deer. You wouldn't think there's another deer just like that. And to pick up the sheds for how many years, 3 years, and then all in the same area, kind of all aligned.
Yeah. When you, like, a lot of times you can tell by pedicle size of how old a deer is, right? The bigger the pedicle, the older the deer is potentially. And so when you found those sheds for the first time, were you able to look at the pedicle and be like, this is a older age class deer?
Oh yeah. Compared to some of the other sheds you find or just can tell. He was 3.5, maybe 4.5 when I picked up that first shed in 17.
Yeah.
That's why when I killed him, I figured he was 8.5, maybe 9.5.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and so then, so you found the sheds, and was this buck like instantly on your radar to start hunting when you started finding those sheds, even though you kind of didn't know anything about him?
Well, where I found the sheds, I just had permission to turkey hunt and shed hunt.
Yeah.
So you, it's not far from the private or the public, but I just never really thought about going back in the public there because I had private. Mm-hmm. So probably 2020 was when I finally started dipping more into the public around by us.
Gotcha. Okay. So you found out about him on private and then you found his sheds for multiple years in a row. And then you started making plans like what, year three of knowing about this buck in the public or year three or four?
Probably year three. I mean, the private, I hen hunt across the road and never had a picture of him once.
Okay.
And then, yeah, that 1 year I found the shed on public and was like, this is where he's got to be. If I don't get him on private by me, but I'm finding his sheds in this other egg field every winter or spring.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about the route that this buck was running throughout the course of a year.
I honestly think, so between where I found his sheds and the public, there's another big chunk of private that this guy has food plots, all nice, but it's part of that public swamp and there's a lot of places he could hide. So I don't know if he just tidied up in there. I mean, the public goes for miles, so there's plenty of room to run. But the year I shot him, he'd be coming out of corn every night and going maybe 300 yards to a bean field. And then in the morning, 4 o'clock, you'd come in from the beans. He's going back towards that cornfield.
Gotcha. And you had enough trail cameras out on the year that you killed him to put together like a really good pattern of where this buck was coming and going from.
Oh yeah, I felt confident. I mean, as much as you could that.
Yeah.
He's the same thing every day or every other. He was coming from that corn, going to the beans, and returning every morning.
Yeah.
And just at night, I killed him with a storm. It probably lifted around 1 in the afternoon and got in there. Yeah. 6 o'clock. All of a sudden, here he comes through the corn.
Yeah. When you got your first pictures of him, did his body look like an old buck body?
He You look like an old dog. Like it hurt to walk. Like you almost felt bad. I don't know if anything matters with hooks, but they were just super long. Like looked like overextended toenails almost.
Dude, I had a buck. Dude, there's something about that. By chance, were his ankles infected or swollen?
It looked like a normal ankle and then just a big knuckle almost.
Yes.
Like a baseball size.
Yes. One of the oldest deer that I have ever documented on trail camera was this buck that I named after my best friend. Maybe you guys have heard me talk about him years ago on this podcast. I named him Ryan Iberg. And this buck was an 8-pointer. I mean, he was out wide. I'm guessing at max his inside spread was like, 27, 8, 9 inches. Like, dude, I mean, wide. Like his main beams didn't come back together. That almost like they just kept going out wide, big, wide, but maybe like short tines, right? His biggest year I have him on camera, he might be 130-ish, right? 135 maybe, right? Huge body. Old deer documented from several years, found his sheds, his G2s would come like up and then in and then back up. So it had this little curve on the back, on the G2 that was very noticeable. And so we found a lot of his sheds throughout the course of his life. But, this buck, as he started to get older, we noticed this. On the ankle of all, on all of his ankles, they were swollen, big softball size. And we're like, dude, he's going to die. Next year he shows up and his hooves were kind of almost like those elf shoes kind of curled back up in. And yep. I'm just like, I don't know. I would love to talk with a biologist to figure out what that is, but he had that for like 3 years. And then on the fourth year, he was gone. Right? Like year four, year five of me knowing about him, he was gone. Right. And I'm guessing that he had that infection or whatever he had, he probably succumbed to that. Right. So, yeah, you saying that, dude, I wonder what that is. I've been trying underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum. Basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
Well, didn't you guys have Ian that does something to feet if they make it through?
Say that again.
Don't you guys have Ian but where it affects their hooves if they make it through?
Ooh, that's a good one. So you're saying that if they beat EHD, then it somehow affects their feet and their hooves?
I think maybe in your case for that buck it did. Mine, we don't have any reports of EHD by us.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. We do have a river nearby, or a big creek. It's not a river per se, but it's a big creek nearby. And maybe he went down there. He was up in up top deer. He wasn't running the river bottoms like some of the other deer were, but yeah, but that to this day is the only deer that I've seen with that condition. So I don't know. Okay. So he looked like an old dog. Big body. So did that change your, like when you found his sheds, I'm guessing you guessed an age on him. And then when you saw the pictures, did that age estimate change when you saw him on the hoof?
Oh, it definitely was like, yeah, I thought I was correct. Like just the way he walked and just,
yeah,
he run down almost.
Yeah.
But it brought, neighbor the year I killed him sent me some pictures across the road, different direction. And that deer in 2020, he looked like a bull.
Yeah.
Just big deer, fat.
Healthy.
Oh, very healthy.
Yeah. And then when you shot him, he looked worn down.
Well, it was early season. So, I mean, just he had that nice summer coat still, but just a long deer in his face just had scars in it. Probably or branches.
Yeah. Yeah. So what year of all the years that you knew about him, what were his antlers the biggest?
Probably earlier in like 2018. He probably, I mean, maybe went 130, but long beam, good hind length, good mass.
And then
he was never crazy.
Yeah. And then the year that you killed him, how big was he?
Never scored him. I'm guessing like 120, but the beams almost don't go out. They just go up almost. He looks like a caribou, like the coloration of the antlers and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome, man. Okay. And so you sent the teeth. Did you pulled the teeth because you were curious about the age, right?
The taxidermy, he sent them off.
Okay. And then did the taxidermist have an estimate about how old this deer was?
He could just tell the deer that he's done. It's an old deer. He also thought 9 and a half.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And then so an old buck, you knew he was old, and you were just surprised that he was roughly 4 or 5 years older than what you thought he was. So when you actually started getting him, he was already an 8 year old, right? Or something like that. And then
when I picked first sheds up, he was probably 4 and a half. And then when I killed him, I figured he was around 9 and a half or 8 and a half.
Okay. So that's what you figured. But when the data came back and whoever aged his teeth said, okay, he's a 14 and a half year old, which blows my mind that a buck in Wisconsin on public land lives that long. Right.
I totally agree.
Like 14 years of not making a mistake during a 2.5 month rifle season blows my mind.
And to think like he was probably born up starting high school was even crazier.
Yeah. Right. That's funny. Okay. So he's 14. And then, so you killed him at 14, which means that he would have been 10 when you initially found him, right?
Yeah. 10 or 9 and a half, somewhere in there.
And so he was still looking, this buck potentially has like hundreds of offspring, right? Like if he's the king and he was breeding, if he was doing a lot of breeding, I mean, there's like generational bloodlines in that area of him, of shitty antler genetics in that area, right?
Yeah. It's funny. The one shed on public I found, there was boot tracks maybe 30 yards away in the snow, and just how thick it is. I almost walked by that shed, looked back, and there it was in a bed, and someone else missed it. So he's like, you wonder how many you walked by out there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's nuts, man. That's nuts. And so, as you started to hunt this deer and as you started to put the pieces of the puzzle, together about this 14 and a half year old buck, what was this buck doing that you thought was different than your average whitetail buck?
Well, just how he's made that far. And up until, I mean, I found sheds in 17 and never to have a picture of him until 2020. And then even in 2021, it was like he almost had a plan every time. Like you could tell there was times he'd walk, like almost loop the camera.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, I
see the camera, but going around it.
Yeah. I strongly believe that deer know that. Right. Like, for some reason, man, I had this trail camera over a mineral site on a different farm that I had access to years ago. And there was this one deer would get caught on camera one time every year. And I had no clue that he was there. the rest of the year. I thought maybe it was a summer pattern. So the one year I was getting a lot of trail cameras stolen. And so I climbed the next tree and I pointed a trail camera down at my other trail camera that was where I had pictures, right? And so long story short, I go and check that card after the season's over. And sure enough, that buck who had been caught on camera one time was still using that same two-track path. He was just walking around the tree that had the trail camera on it. It blew my mind, and that made me think, like, dude, this deer knows that this somehow knows that this trail camera is telling me that this buck is here. Like, there's no other way, right? Why would a deer choose to take the path of more resistance around this tree through these bushes and not just continue to walk on the two track every single time? Like, I don't know. It was, like I said, it kind of made me think about how intelligent deer are.
It makes you love trail cameras and then hate them at the same time. 100%. When you see
that. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. You're only seeing what 20% of the, you're only seeing like 20% of the area. That's like, I don't know. They do have those 360 degree trail cameras though, that I always thought would be kind of cool, but I don't know.
I get enough grass pictures going.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so where this particular buck was living then, do you have an idea of where he was bedding and why he made it this long then?
I mean, the year I killed him, he was always coming out of that corn, and yeah, that night I shot him too, he was in the corn on his seat probably an hour and a half before dark and just eating and moving through there, but I had enough rows knocked down, so I don't know if he did that a lot in the fall. Or just how that swamp is too. I mean, you could walk right by it if you wanted to sit still.
Yeah. Do you think this buck got old by accident, or was he somehow smarter than all the hunters that hunted this? 54. You said 54 vehicles in this particular piece of public property, right? During the gun season.
I mean, it stretches out probably within a mile and a half, but they all are connected to the same public.
Yeah. I still have a hard time believing that this buck was just so stealthy and smart that he made it that far without a little bit of dumb luck on his side. You know what I mean? Especially in that high of hunting pressure.
I agree. I mean, got lucky, knew where to hide every time, but it makes you wonder where the heck he could have went. Because even that private land, the guy's got box stands, he's got food plots.
Yeah.
So there's always this, like, there's people around.
Yeah. Yep. I somehow think, like, I don't know. You see these videos of like a car running a red light and just like missing a train, missing another head-on collision, missing all the, like, another pedestrian on a bicycle. And it's just dumb luck that no one got hurt in a scenario like that. Right. And so my guess is, like, I don't know why I'm thinking about this and why this is, like, I'm so blown away by this, that a 14 and a half year old buck made it through that many Wisconsin gun seasons. It makes me think, like, nobody practices with their rifles at all. They're just like lobbing shots at this buck all season long, and he just somehow never gets hit. Like, when you skinned him or took him apart, took the meat out of him, did you notice any scars, like, from bullet holes or broadhead wounds?
Yeah, honestly, didn't have one, like, injury from a hunter. His face was all scarred up and his body from, like, fighting, but no broadhead stuck in him.
Blows my mind, dude.
But even, like, me and my brother talked, like, even if he was just, that's part of the fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, he made it to 14 and you made sure he didn't make it to 15. So, dude, crazy, crazy story. Good little uplifting story there. Dude, I honestly don't know. That's the oldest story. That's the oldest buck story I've ever heard after 10 years of doing this, right? I've talked with wildlife biologists from the National Deer Association who have said that the oldest wild doe has been reported at like over 20 years old, but not a buck. So that's crazy. So thank you very much for sharing that story, dude. I appreciate your time today, and good luck this upcoming season, man.
Thanks. You also appreciate it.